1026, the show that, well, in honor of our friend, the Polish whiz kid, Jerry Larkowski, being in studio, Matt and I decided we'd take the funk from the back office and put it in your face. We keep the funk in your face on this program. We don't put it in our pocket. We don't keep it locked up anywhere. We keep it in your face. If you knew, by the way, one of the original breakdancers, Jerry Larkowski. Used to see him walking around Hendricks College with his little piece of cardboard. Then he'd start to do the little bounce back and forth. Next thing you know, he's twirling around on the ground.
Head. Had been in the age of YouTube, I'd have gone viral.
Oh. Oh, you went viral, my friend. When you were
well, I walked into that, didn't I?
Oh, you put it up on the tee. Martin Lewis here making an appearance.
Handed you the golf club.
Jerry Larkowski in studio with us. He noted defense lawyer, amongst many other things, and a one-time prosecutor, and we're talking about what happened with the West Memphis Three. And a couple things we want to clarify, because unfortunately, Friday, guys from the Zone are commenting on this and others, and if there's one sad radio fact, it's that I love those guys, but I don't want to hear them talking about the law. I don't want to hear them talking about politics. I don't want to hear them. I want to hear, you know, some sports, and that's about it. Maybe a little bit of pop culture, but don't stray too far. They got into this whole notion of double jeopardy, of can they make money off of the – could they sell a book? Could they do – so let's clear a few things up. The idea in this case of double jeopardy doesn't exist because these folks have pled guilty.
That's correct.
The case is closed. They pled guilty. And on Friday, they in a bizarre I really thought, it, again, whether you believe they were innocent or guilty, I don't think that anyone believes that justice was served as a result of what happened on Friday. Mm-hmm. I think you lay the blame squarely at the feet of the prosecutor, Duke Ellington, or whatever his name is. And because whether you think they're innocent or guilty, that's not justice. The innocent men, if you believe they're innocent, have been forced to plead guilty and have spent 20 years for a crime they didn't commit. Or guilty people basically ran a great con, got Hollywood involved, told the perfect jailhouse story. You know, hey, they didn't understand me. They didn't get me over there. And so it was prejudice that convicted me, and we're all victims. They play that great, you know, the jailhouse victim, and you know what I'm talking about. They're all innocent, and they all, oh, you know, you don't understand. And they got off. Literally got off a death row. So either way, justice is not served on what happened on Friday. The idea of double jeopardy doesn't exist because these folks have pled guilty. So I believe I'm right in saying this, Jerry, without knowing if they're... There are no stipulations to that plea. Damien Echols could write a book tomorrow detailing exactly how he did it, and with the exception of maybe the feds and some civil rights issue, or can't be prosecuted. Cannot be prosecuted for murder by the state of Arkansas.
Well, they did that in Oklahoma City bombing case.
Yes.
Actually, it was the reverse. So, yes, the feds would have jurisdiction, but it would be a rare bird for them to do that in this case.
But he has pled guilty and has been convicted and the case is closed. So if indeed, you know, he goes out and writes a book, one, he can make any money off of it he wants to. Arkansas does not have a statute that deals with profiting from crime. He wouldn't be in any kind of legal jeopardy because he has pled guilty and has served his time and has been released by the state. I'm correct in saying that, aren't I?
Well, and it's interesting that a lot of people are questioning what an Alford plea is.
Yeah, I thought it was named after former Indiana point guard Steve Alford. Turns out that's completely wrong.
There are four pleas that you can make when you're in court on a case like this. There's, of course, not guilty. There's guilty. There's not guilty by reason of mental disease. And then the fourth one is what we call, the Latin phrase is nolo contendere, but it's mm-hmm. no contest, meaning I'm not.
I thought that was my groundskeeper, nolo contendere.
There
nolo!
You go. But basically,
missed a spot.
No contest means is I'm not saying that I did it, but I'm not going to fight the charge because I don't think I can beat it, is basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And an Alford plea is kind of a blend between a nolo and a guilty plea. And, you know, like the papers said, they were saying they're guilty, but they're really not. the Alford plea is designed for a situation just like this, where you see the handwriting on the wall, you just want it to end, you don't want to run the risk of the death penalty, so you will take what they're saying and maintain your innocence, but at least say you're guilty so that the case ends. And, you know, a lot of people are going to agree with you that justice wasn't served. The way I've looked at it, just because from my perspective of the field I'm in, a lot of judges will say that a good settlement is where both sides walk away just a little bit irritated. And that's what I think happened here. The West Memphis Three, they maintain their innocence. They're adamant about it. The prosecution obviously would like to have retried the case and duplicated the convictions and the sentences. But I think both sides had their concerns.
And so, but an Alford plea is a give up. Basically, it allows both sides to walk away from it and give up. And
that's true.
I think that's
well, but really, I mean, every negotiated plea is the same thing. The way you're characterizing it, the Alford plea. Normally, when a person appears in front of a judge on a criminal case and they plead guilty, they'll go through a whole litany of questions about you have a right to a trial, you have a right to cross-examine witnesses, etc. And then the state or the government, whoever's prosecuting the case, will give their version of what their proof would be at trial. And in a guilty plea, a judge typically will say, did you do that? Or, you know, having heard that, I'll make a factual basis. And so in this case, it's basically, you know, I'm not stipulating to those facts. I'm giving up, or I'm settling. I'm taking what we've decided on here.
How often do you see prosecutors? Because one of the issues that Duke Ellington brought forward, I don't know what his first name is.
Scott. I went to law school with him. He's a very intelligent guy. Good guy. Never tried a case with him. Never had a case with him. But
there we go. He's the guy that you put, well, one of the issues is that he brought forward is that it would be very difficult to retry the case. And I think that successfully the defense team and the external pressure from a movie being made about it and a number of other things was they were retrying the initial trial. And as I pointed out in the first segment, you can't do that. You shouldn't retry the original trial because a prosecutor's emphasizing some points, de-emphasizing others to get a conviction. That is a fluid animal. You're making a plea, and if you believe that the jury wants to hear X to convict, well, then you're going to play to that. That's what successful prosecutors do. The same way defense teams, O.J. Simpson, very famously, his defense team made race an issue, very brilliantly an issue.
So, it worked.
And it worked. And that's my point, is that oftentimes you see both defense counsels and prosecutors play to specific aspects, attempting to get a conviction based on what the jury is and looks like. So these guys very successfully retried the trial. And then the prosecutor in this case, Scott Ellington, comes out and says, well, it'd be very hard to get a conviction based on the so-called jury tampering that had occurred in the original trial, which I'm still not quite certain exactly what that was. When we think of jury tampering, I think somebody has snuck in the knife and presented in the jury room, and which I don't think was the case here. I think it was basically the Baldwin confession that was introduced during the Miss Kelly and Eccles trial. Also, the death of the medical examiner. But in this case, isn't it better that you don't have the medical examiner? I mean, all that can be introduced then at the new trial would be the transcript from the medical examiner and what he said at trial the last time. I mean, isn't it better oftentimes for the prosecutors to have no witness because you have to go back to that trial transcript? You can't cross-examine the medical examiner based on new evidence because it is what it is.
Well, what would happen is one of a couple things. Either they would agree to use the medical examiner's testimony because it was subject to cross-examination, and so they did have an opportunity to cross-examine the medical examiner. They would either do that, or they would have somebody who's currently a medical examiner pull the file, dust off, you know, read through it, and see what the findings were, and then comment on it. And they would either adopt the findings, or they would distinguish it. The other thing is that the defense team might have hired their own forensic pathologist to come in and critique what the medical examiner found. So No, I mean, I see where the Scott Ellington was worried about retrying an old case. It's hard. Witnesses disappear. Well, and deaths have occurred. Evidence gets lost. Memories fade. This Robin Hood Woods, whatever it's called.
Land development.
Apparently, I mean, it's changed considerably. It would be a great parallel I thought of over the weekend is if you tried to retry a murder that happened outside the Grady Manning and Marion Hotel today, it's not there. You know, how are you going to be able to tell where the sunlight was or the streetlights? I mean, it gets the longer it goes on, the more hard it is to be able to defend because of things like that.
Having said all that, you got to try the trial. I mean, as a prosecutor, and you were there. There are some instances you just can't walk away from because it's too hard.
There are two things
you can't do that. You know,
I can't defend or criticize Scott Ellington because I haven't.
I'm
read
not
the
asking
case.
You to.
But I'll say this: there are two theories. One is, oh my gosh, we're going to lose this case, and we had got the death penalty one time, and we tried it boldly and lost, and now we look like buffoons. Or, you know what? I'm going to make the best effort I can at this thing, and if a jury decides to walk these guys, then the jury decides, and I've done my job. Those
right.
are the two theories.
Right.
Scott chose the first one, and I don't know.
I'm not asking you for an editorial comment. I just think, again, whether you believe they're innocent or guilty, there's no sense of justice that has occurred surrounding Friday. There's not. So the only way that could have occurred, again, if you believe the state Supreme Court would give them a new trial, then you got to go try that. And just because it's hard, you can't walk away from it. And don't give me a bunch of crap about, well, they're on probation now and we're able to. No, that doesn't fly. That's not. Or bizarrely, he somehow was concerned that they could sue the state and the money that would cost the state. I mean, that's a ridiculous claim. So, I mean, you can't retry him because it's just too hard to do and we're worried about saving the state some money. That's what this has come to. I don't know. Maybe I need Rupert Holmes to sing us out. More of Jerry Larkowski. These opinions are his, by the way, not mine. I'm kidding, Jerry. I'm kidding. Stay with us back after this. I knew a smile in an instant. I knew the curve of her face. It was my own lovely lady. And she said, oh, it's you. Then we laughed for a moment. And I said,